I'd like to introduce our speaker tonight, Kelly P. Kelly P., it's all your time.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for letting me be here. When Eric called and asked me to speak, all I heard was men's stag meeting. And I was like, I've always wanted to speak at a men's stag. I just thought it would be different than this. And you know, it's really hard to do these Zoom meetings, but I appreciate the invitation. And as weird as this might seem, Eric was wonderful about making sure I felt loved and welcomed, even in this weird Zoom world. So I know that sometimes people call him Special K, and I totally get why you would want to call him special. So thank you, Eric. And I really want to do a great job. This is my first men's stag. and I'm sitting here in Montana where it's cold. And so I'm going through all of your pictures where sometimes I can see a window behind you. And it's beautiful there. It's like behind Chris right now, I can see the sun. And John has some greenery behind. No, it's, so I'm living vicariously through your windows behind you. So anyway, I wanna do the best I can here, even under these weird Zoom circumstances. So let me just tell you, I come from a really long line of untreated alcoholics. My mom's dad, my grandpa, was by every estimation an alcoholic. He was a North Dakota freight train engineer and a drunk. They let him drive trains all over the West drunk. And nobody knows if he died sober. My other grandpa, my dad's dad, was also by every estimation an alcoholic. He was a top shelf alcoholic. He was a North Dakota wheat farmer. He lived in this little town on the border between North Dakota and Canada. And a party did not start if my grandpa wasn't there. He owned the fiddle in that little town, and he owned almost all of the liquor. He is our family hero. He is your family hero too. You just don't know it yet. During Prohibition, he ran liquor down from Canada into the United States to make sure your ancestors had what they needed. Yeah, see, he's your family hero too. you know, he died before I was ever born. He died when my dad was just a little boy. So I never met him. My grandma, she outlived him by almost 50 years. And when I was born, she moved in with us, and she and I shared a bedroom and a bed until I was 18 years old. And it was uncomfortable. But at night we would lay in bed, and she would just tell me horrible stories about him and how much she just did not like him. She hated him. And she stayed that way until she died for 50 years. You know, we know some really sick people in Al-Anon, but I have never met anyone who can keep a resentment hot and fresh for 50 years after the guy is dead. So some people would call my grandma an Al-Anon, but she never found Al-Anon. I call people that are like my grandma, who desperately need Al-Anon but never find it, I call them alligators. And my grandma was the queen of all alligators, keeping resentment hot and fresh like that. And you need to know this, because I did not come to my disease by accident. I came to my disease from learning from the best. I think my grandma was a queen of all the alligators, with her ability, her untreated Al-Anonism, and her ability to keep resentments hot and fresh. So that's my heritage. My mom and dad have 14 brothers and sisters between them, and all of them are heavy drinkers, married to heavy drinkers, or some of them are dead from heavy drinking. My mom and dad, they found each other fast, they got married fast, and they made babies fast. And that's, you know, if there was a book for untreated alcoholics and untreated Al-Anons, that's exactly what it would say we should do. Find each other fast, get married fast, and then make babies fast. Not always in that order. You can shake that up if you want. But that's what they did. And they made me and my four brothers. And all of us are heavy drinkers, married to heavy drinkers. And some of us are on the fast track to dying from heavy drinking. I've got a couple, all of my four brothers, they, you know, you get the cereal box and it says collect all four. My brothers have done that with DUIs, DWIs. I don't know what you call it in your state, but all of my brothers have at least one. Some of them have gotten to the felony level. And as a person who's got 22 years in Al-Anon, I know my job is to keep my mouth shut and keep going to meetings. I need to remember that my higher power or their higher power has got it figured out for them. And my higher power knows where to put me in a seat in a meeting to keep my mouth shut. So thank you, Al-Anon. Thank you, Al-Anon, for giving me a place to share my pain and not share my business or try to boss my brother's business about who needs to sober up. So that's my family. I was raised poor. Growing up, my brothers and I, we ate out of garbage cans. My dad always had a job. There was always a check coming in. But if you come from an alcoholic home, you know that money runs through your fingers like water. So there's money, but there never was money. So we would go to the grocery store garbage cans, those big dumpsters, and we would dumpster dive to make sure that we could eat. And I don't know what families do now. I know we needed those dumpsters to make ends meet. And I know they lock those dumpsters up now. So I have no idea how families are making it work. I was speaking in Iowa a couple years ago, and I stood up to go to the podium, and this guy grabbed my arm and he said, "If you do a good job, I have a warm yogurt out in the car for you." Because one of the things we would do is dumpster dive for the yogurts. And I remember one time we got the over 100 of those little fanciest flavor little yogurt cups. And they were a little warm, but you put them in the refrigerator and they're mostly fine, mostly. But I remember thinking I had died and gone to heaven and that you could eat yogurt till Christmas and you would never run out. So I don't have sad memories of doing that. I have very proud memories of being able to be a little kid and help feed my family. So my dad was also very much into politics. He would drag us off to these political barbecues and picnics. And I remember being bored at one of these. And I sat down next to this big glass pickle jar where people were throwing money so you could see, you know, how much people were supporting this candidate. And I remember sitting down and looking at that jar and just starting to count up the money in there. And I turned the jar around. And there in that jar was a check from my dad for $500, $500 1970s dollars. And we were eating out of garbage cans. And my dad was giving hundreds of dollars to strangers. And I know that check did not bounce. It was really important for my dad to look good to his drinking buddies. So I know that check did not bounce. But what I do remember is just feeling this like pouring acid on my soul. That for some reason, his kids could not come first in the food department, clothing department. And I don't know if there's any members of Alcoholics Anonymous here at all, but if there are, I just want to say thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous for every time you held an open AA meeting, because every time you held one of those meetings, it gave room for people like me to sit and listen to people like you share about how you really meant to bring the money home and how you really meant to feed your kids. But alcoholism was just too strong. I have learned so much from you, and you've put a lot of salve on that wound in my soul about my dad. In one of those meetings, one of the alcoholics said if his dad had died and he hadn't worked a ninth step yet, And that's my circumstance. My dad died. I hadn't worked a ninth step with him. And this guy just said, you know what? Why don't you find somebody who reminds you of your dad and then just be of service to that person? And I thought, well, gosh, where in the world am I going to find like a 70-year-old cranky, racist, sexist, mean, swearing Korean war vet? They are overstocked over there in AA. But my sponsor said I'm supposed to stay far from AA. So I went out to the our local VA, our Veterans Hospital. And if you want God to know you are willing to go to any lengths to do a ninth step, go ahead and try to volunteer at the VA. It took probably 5 or 6 months just to get the paperwork to clear. And I would head out to the VA, and my job was finally, when they approved me, my job was to call out there once a month and say, I am from this religious denomination. Would you like someone to come and pray with you? And they never needed me. So I was the best ninth step ever. And then I did that for probably more than a year. And then one time they said, yeah, we have two people. So I had to change my afternoon plans, and I drove all the way out to the VA. And I walked into they said they had two. I walked into the first guy's room, and he was an 80-year-old, mean, swearing, racist, sexist, bitter man. And I thought, man, if God was just trying to line him up with my dad, he did. And so I just wanted to say my line and get out of there. I said, I'm here from this religious denomination. If you want somebody to pray with you, I will, but I can leave. And then he cried. He started crying because he was lonely and he was scared. He didn't understand what was going on around him. He didn't know how long he'd end up being at the VA. He didn't know if he was getting better. And he let me sit there and pray with him. I should have told you that I'm Irish, and somebody told me the Irish, we just cry. So I'm sorry, I'm just gonna cry. But I brought my own Kleenex. So I stayed with him for a few minutes. And then I went to visit my second guy, and they said, you know, you don't wanna visit him. He's got dementia. He's probably dying today or tomorrow. But I had gone all that way. I made this deal with God. So I said, by golly, I'm going to do it. So I walked into this room, and they had this man strapped down by his arms. He probably weighed only 80 pounds. He was old, and he was struggling against the restraints they had on his arms. And he was talking and he was complaining, but you couldn't understand a word he was saying. He couldn't understand a word he was saying. And it was really... it was really scary to be there at the last few minutes of somebody's life. And I just stood there and I said my line, would you like somebody to pray with you? And he just continued to thrash about in his bed. And I do not know what you did to me, Al-Anon, but thank you. Thank you for teaching me the Lord's Prayer. But I just stood there and I just placed my hand on his shoulder. And I just started saying the Lord's Prayer while he was thrashing around. And he just settled down. He just laid down into his bed and he just fell asleep in the gentlest of ways. I don't know if he died that night. I don't know if he died the next day, but I do know that you taught me how to show up and give somebody one moment's peace. And I never asked my dad if he would like me to reach out and pray with him. So thank you for that blessing of the ninth step. Thank you for teaching me to pray. I have so much healing over that relationship with my dad, and my dad's been gone for, 12 years now. So thank you all for that blessing. That's where I come from. When I grew up in that kind of crazy alcoholicness, and when I got to be 18, it didn't make any sense to me that everybody else got an alcoholic and I didn't get one. So I went off to the local college where they're overstocked, and I found mine quite quickly. The AA boys here call him Jeff M. The Al-Anon women call him Java Jeff, and I hope I get to talk to you about that today. But I just called him handsome. He was this beautiful thing. He looked, had long, blonde, curly hair. I don't know if any of you know who Spicoli is from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but he was Spicoli. he was beautiful. We found each other fast. We got married fast. He didn't want to make babies. He wanted to go to grad school. He applied to tons. They all accepted him. He picked one and we went to it. What we know now is the school that he picked is always in the top three or four drinking schools in the United States. And there's usually a California school or two in that category too. I don't know where you are, but you could have gone to one of them. But I can't think of anyone who was sober while we were doing those graduate school years. And really, I should tell you the drinking years were horrible. They were actually pretty fabulous. And then they became fabulous with fights. And then they just became fights. It didn't help that we made babies in there. I ended up pregnant with twins. My family was far away, so we ended up raising these twins by ourselves. And that's when the wheels really came off our wagon. Lots of fighting. I didn't know what to do, so I kind of whispered to a friend that things were really bad in our house. And she said, well, that's easy. All you have to do is be a better wife. And, I don't know. So I thought, well, I could tidy up our house. I could tidy up the kids. I could tidy myself up. I lost probably 40 pounds, which is totally sexy. If you think famine is sexy, I was it. And I thought I could track all the money going in and out so that we wouldn't have to fight about money. Turns out alcoholics are addicts and they will do everything they can to have the money to get what they need. And they will sneak behind you and they will go around you. And sometimes they will plow right through you to get what they need. So things did not get better for us. Things got worse. But thank you, God. He graduated and he got a job. So we packed up our little babies and we drove all the way across the country to this little town of Helena, Montana. And I hated everything about this flea-bitten town of Helena, Montana. Happens to be where I still live. We've been here for 25 years now, and I love everything about Montana now. And I know why God put us here. Jeff and I were about ready to lob hand grenades into our relationship until there was nothing left but dust. And if we were going to make it, we were going to need to be where there's recovery that is just on fire. And that's Helena, Montana. And if you're ever in my corner of the world, and you should be, especially in the summer, it's July is the only month I can guarantee no snow. August, maybe. But if you're here on a Monday night, my home group is the Good Grief Al-Anon group, Monday nights at 7. And I would love to show you off to my home group. So, but I didn't know about Al-Anon in those first years. I just knew that I was home with two little babies and I would spend all day thinking about how our life is awful and how it is his fault. And he would come home from his very stressful days and all he really wanted were the three B's. He wanted to see his babies. He wanted to watch basketball and he wanted to drink beer. And instead he got the fourth B waiting for him by the front door. And he would come in and we would put those babies to bed and we would then just have these knockdown, drag out fights. And you know, our babies were very little when we lived there, but one of them remembers having a nightmare of a train crashing through our home. And it could have just been a nightmare or it could have been her parents. And you know, if there was a manual for untreated alcoholics and untreated Al-Anons, it would say, pretend the kids don't know. But they know our kids are whippersnappers. They are smart and sharp, and they notice things. And when they notice things, we tell them, oh, dad's just sick. And we lie to them. But our kids knew, they were aware. We were not always able to keep all the fights after bedtime either. I remember having a horrible fight. The girls might've been 6 or 7. And I sent them down the hall to their bedroom so they didn't have to hear how people 2 blocks away could hear. But I sent them to their room. And when my husband stormed out and slammed the door, I went down the hall to check on the girls. And you know what those little buggers did? They had taken their color crayons and they had colored red circles and green leaves. And they had taped maybe 8 or 10 of these pictures up and down our hallway. And I remember thinking, those little monsters are ruining the paint by putting tape on it like that. And so I went down the hall and I just burst into their bedroom and I said, what the heck are you two doing? Only I was way meaner than that. And these 4 little eyeballs looked up at me and they said, those are mistletoe, Mama. Those are pictures of mistletoe. Because mistletoe means love and kisses. And so here are these little babies trying to figure out the mystery of alcoholism. It's freaking cunning, baffling, and I don't remember all of the things, but my little babies were trying to figure it out. And they're doing a better job than Jeff and I were. All we could do is fight about it. And if you ever look up the folklore, on mistletoe, it was used in ancient times. They would hang it up as a sign that this is where you come and you lay down your weapons and you negotiate peace. And we didn't know that then. We know it now. We had lots of fights like that. One time my husband came home from one of those fights and I just said, you know, things are bad here. We need marriage counseling. And he said, I know, you're crazy. You should go. So I went to marriage counseling by myself for almost 2 years. It doesn't work that way. But I tried it. I tried it for almost 2 years. The counselor invited him one time. And he came in and sat down. And she said, Kelly is leaving you. I just thought you should know. And you know, you could have just tipped him over with a feather. He was so surprised. And I'm just looking at him like, how could you possibly not know this? I've been throwing him out for years. I found him apartments. That's how sick of an untreated Al-Anon I was. But none of that was a sign to him that things were bad. So this is my little public service announcement for you. If your wife or your partner is throwing you out, at least once a month, things are bad for you. I just thought you should know. So he's totally surprised. He looks at me and he says, oh, we need marriage counseling. So off we went to find a marriage counselor who would work with both of us. And we found one. And if you have never tried marriage counseling, you have to try it. It doesn't fix alcoholism. But it is a total hoot. You have to do this. You walk into this little room and the marriage counselor says, so Kelly, tell me what's been going on. And I would just vomit all of the things he was doing wrong and all the ways he did it wrong and all the times he did it wrong. It was great. And I loved that. We would leave those sessions and I would just go, that went well. Jeff and the marriage counselor just looked like their hair was blown back, like they were stuck in a wind tunnel of crap. So I thought it was going well. We did that 3 or 4 weeks. And then the marriage counselor said, you know, Kelly, you do not need to come back. And I said, I know. I am the good one. I already know all of this stuff. And you need all your time for Mr. Bad Behavior over here. So it made sense to me that I did not need to come back. And the counselor said, no, you do not need to come back because your rage your meanness, your bitterness, and your ire is just ruining this process. So please, oh, please do not come back. So I get to sit before you, one of the few people you will ever meet who has flunked out of marriage counseling. Looking back, this is when I probably stole the crown from my grandma. You know, she was the queen of all alligators, keeping a resentment hot and fresh for 50 years, but I flunked out of marriage counseling. So I left. I never went back. I don't know what my husband did. I do know that about 8 or 10 months later, he came home and he said, "You know what? I think I might be an alcoholic." And I turned on him and I said, "Oh yeah, I can think of a different A word," because I knew he wasn't an alcoholic. He didn't drink like my brothers. He didn't drink like my family. He had a home, he had a job, he had a loving wife at home. So I was sure he wasn't an alcoholic. But he insisted, and off he went to hang out in church basements with those AA boys. And he became happy, joyous, and free. And I did not. AA gave him a new design for living. And I just had the same old design. I thought marriage was like a game of tug of war. You wake up, everybody grabs their end of the rope, you pull and somebody loses. I thought marriage was supposed to be picking at each other and fighting. And, you know, you pick at each other all day, you fight right around dinner, and he goes to sleep in his office and I get the big bed alone, but victorious. That's what I thought a marriage was. And then I don't know what happens in those A&A meetings, but somehow, somewhere, somebody told him, you didn't always have to pick up your end of the rope. You didn't have to participate in every fight. So he stopped doing that, which only made me madder. And if you really want to make a mad person madder, put them around a pink cloud happy person sometime. So he got better and better, and I got worse and worse. And after a year of living that way, he came home one day and he said, I deserve to be happy. And he moved out on me, the good one. And that's when I thought I should do some research into this Al-Anon thing. I still was pretty sure alcoholism was not our problem, but I could at least go and get a brochure. And back then, to get the brochure, you had to go to a meeting. So I went Monday night. I walked in and they said, "You're just in time for a meeting." And I said, "I don't need a meeting. I need the brochure." And they said, "Have a seat. We'll go get you the brochure." So I sat down, and I don't think they ever brought me a brochure. but it was really a horrible meeting. It was, think of your worst meeting times 10. It was that horrible. It was, I don't know. No offense, Al-Anon, no offense, but it looked to me like God had just plopped me down right in the middle of the sisterhood of comfortable clothing. They all were wearing flip-flops and sweatpants, and they were saying things like, "My husband's in jail, ha, 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 ha." And I could tell they weren't taking this thing seriously. And for me, this thing was deadly serious. So I thought I was just gonna get out of there. Before I left, this woman said, "Why don't you just pay 6 meetings and see if it works?" And I thought she was a genius. Now I know you guys say that 6 meeting thing to everybody, but back then I just thought it was the most eureka moment of, I don't know, the last 20 years of my life. And what I want to say to Al-Anon is, I know we're tempted to not share those cliche statements like that, but really your cliche saved my life. So thank you for those. So I thought that was brilliant. I can do 6 meetings in a week in my town. So the next day I went to my second meeting at Tuesday noon, and I walked in and a guy I had never seen before said, "Hi, Kelly." And my world fell apart. Now, I actually had seen that guy the night before. He was in that meeting with all those dowdy women. So no wonder. I thought they all looked dowdy. They weren't all women. And he was just doing what we do. He was just welcoming the newcomer, and he remembered my name. But for me, I just thought, you know, it's like Al-Anon FBI. This guy knows my name, and he's going to find out who my husband is, and thanks, tell my husband's boss, he'll lose his job, and we'll lose the house, and we'll be living on the streets, and that's how crazy I am. So I was terrified that this guy knew my name. I sat down in that second meeting, horrified that I'd somehow blown it. And I sat there for about 5 or 10 minutes, and suddenly it dawned on me that, yeah, I had blown it. But once the secret is out, you never have to live in the lie ever again. And I love that. I love that. I could just feel my muscles relax, my shoulders drop, and I could just breathe for the first time in my life. And I loved it. And that's why I kept coming back. I didn't come back because I wanted what you had, because I didn't. I thought you people were weird. You couldn't say God, you would say higher power. How could you have a place with no leader? How could you have a place with no dues or fees? None of this made sense to me. But I wanted to keep coming back because I wanted to keep breathing. And that's what I did. And you guys kind of rub off on people. And I just started doing what I call the 4 S's. I started to just sit in a meeting, get a sponsor, work the steps, be of service. And your life will be wonderful. And it's true. And if you're new, I think what Dean and Alex have 1 year, Laura, 1 year. I believe you that that should not work. But I don't know, there's 147 people here on a Zoom precisely because they know that it does work. So it's what I just started doing, and weird things started happening for us. For example, I started praying that we could eventually afford a weekend camping trip with the girls to start building positive family memories. And about that time, a little town called and asked if I would come and do some contract work for 2 weeks. And I know you don't leave your family for 2 weeks. So I called them back and said, thanks for nothing. And they said, bring your family. We'll pay for food and housing. You just need to cover airplane tickets. And so my husband and I sat down with our little computer. If there was a manual for untreated alcoholics and untreated Al-Anons, it would say, fine, have a bank account, but you better not have any money in it. And that's where we were. So we sat down with our computer and we just did not have money for those plane tickets. And I probably should tell you that that little town was in the Virgin Islands. Yeah, so we couldn't afford to buy those tickets. But before I called them back, I got a call from a town that's just an hour from here. And they asked if I could come and do some work for them. They couldn't pay very much, but they could just pay this little bit. It was exactly the same amount as those plane tickets. So this little beat up, broken down alcoholic family got 2 weeks in a 4-star resort in the Virgin Islands. You know, who has that happened to them? How does this happen? I think the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says something like, are these extravagant promises? Yeah, the alcoholics always say, we think not. The truth of the matter is, these are absolutely extravagant promises. And yet they're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they always materialize if you work for them. And the working is sitting in a meeting, getting a sponsor, working the steps, and being of service. So they are extravagant promises, but we just get so used to this kind of thing happening in our lives. We're like, yeah, Virgin Islands. And that kind of thing happened all the time. especially if I listened to you. I always thought the hours of 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. were reserved for fighting with your husband. If you go to Al-Anon, they will tell you that is not true, that 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. is actually reserved for you to make your home a nice, quiet, peaceful place for your kids to do their homework and get ready for school. And it sounds boring, and it was boring compared to fighting with your husband. But we did that for, you know, days and weeks turned into months and years, and our kids got really good at school. And when they were seniors in high school, they said they wanted to go to college. And I know we don't always hear that. Sometimes college funds get used for lawyer fees or treatment or all kinds of other things. So they wanted to go to college. We said, nobody sends twins to college. Nobody. You will never find anybody who can afford to send twins to college. So we said, apply where you want, but make sure you apply to the local community college. And maybe if you went part-time and we all worked extra jobs and you lived in the basement, maybe this could work. In the spring of that year, they came to us and they said, we want to go to like these colleges. And they showed us pictures of what I can only describe as castles. These things were big and beautiful and hundreds and thousands of miles away and hundreds and thousands of dollars. We could double mortgage our house and we would not afford 1 year at these colleges. So I said to them, well, that's lovely, dears, but they would have to accept you first. And they both said, but Mom, they did. And then I said, they would have to give you the mother of all scholarships before you could ever go to those schools. And they both said, but Mom, they did. And then I had to excuse myself and call my sponsor because there's no way I'm letting my babies leave me and travel away. They were the only things I had through the worst of the drinking, through the nightmares. It's all I had. And so I called my sponsor and I told her I couldn't let them go because my heart would shatter into a million pieces. And she said, I know, but we're still going to buy plastic things for their dorm rooms. We're still going to pack their bags. And we're still going to put them on airplanes. And every week you are going to come to your home group and we are going to tape your heart back together. And that's what they did for me for years and years. One of those babies called and she said, I'm in love. Maggie fell in love with Katie. They got married a year and a half ago. And Katie is the most beautiful addition to our family. Sometimes we like Katie better than we like our own kids. and they'll never come home. They are so happy where they are. And the other one called home and said, I want to be a doctor. And now I don't know anything about that. But researching it, you don't get to be a doctor unless you get an A in a class called organic chemistry. It's way worse than it sounds. It's like 100 times worse than the name would lead you to think it is. So it's called organic chemistry. It's horrible. She took the class and got a really old, cranky, horrible teacher, and everyone was flunking. She would call home every other day just in tears because you don't get to be a doctor without an A in organic chemistry. So I'm spending all my time trying to figure out how I am going to learn organic chemistry in the next couple weeks. I can help out. And as God would have it, he put me on an airplane and took me off to a conference like this, but in person. And my host picked me up and she started talking about how the conference was going to be and how fabulous and how wonderful. And all I could think is how sad my daughter was and how horrible the circumstance. So when she finally took a breath, I just said, I am so sorry. I'm not present. Here's what's going on in my mind. And I just told her. And you know what she said? This is going to sound like a cruel joke, but it is not. She said, organic chemistry? I have a PhD in that. And then she said, and my husband, he also has a PhD in that. And then she said, and he teaches the exact same class here at our local college. And the one thing you need to know about this couple is that they are upstanding and outstanding members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. And by midnight that night, he had signed our daughter up for his organic chemistry course. So she got all of his sample tests, all of his recorded lectures, all of his sample quizzes, and our daughter got an A in organic chemistry. Yeah. And I have to tell you, she graduated a couple months ago. She's a doctor in a little NICU, and she's taking care of babies who are born less than 2 pounds. Those babies' lives are being saved by a child who's been raised by you. Because I have to tell you, those miracles, those things I just talked about, those things are miracles. I was calling them coincidences for a long time. And my part in all of that is nothing compared to you guys. My part was to say out loud the pain in my heart. And then you guys showed up every time you could, whenever you could. And oh, are we back? Okay, can you hear me? Great, okay. every time you could, you guys showed up and made those miracles happen. So thank you for that. You taught me that my higher power has a dump truck of miracles just waiting to dump on my family. And he's probably been trying to deliver that dump truck for the last, I don't know, 50 years of my life. And I've just been that mean old lady sitting on the front porch saying, get that thing off my lawn. And I don't know what you did to me in Al-Anon. I don't know if you just kept me so busy I didn't see the dump truck, or you just taught me that my higher power lived only 12 steps away and then you held my hand and helped me walk them. But I have miracles happening all the time now. And I just got the little 10-minute sign. So I want to share with you what I think is the biggest miracle that happened. I told you that my husband moved back, but I didn't tell you that it wasn't really very much marriage. It was like we were kind and cordial roommates instead of married people. And I loved it. I loved having that kind of kindness in my house after so many fights. And then one day I got done with work at 2 and went to a coffee shop, and there, I had to pick my kids up at 3. So I had this hour, and there was my husband at the coffee shop. And I remember thinking, you know, he's kind of like a roommate. Do you shake hands? Do you high five? And we just didn't even know what to do with each other. So we got our coffee and talked to each other for 20 minutes. And we were so proud of ourselves. Because in marriage counseling, we were required to talk to each other for 5 minutes every night, and we couldn't do it. And there we were, talking to each other. Then coffee got expensive, so we started meeting at home for coffee. And then one day I went home at 2 p.m. to have coffee with my husband, and he didn't want coffee. It was a coffee, tea, or me moment. And he was picking me. And I wrote that all off. I just wrote all of that off. I just wanted kindness. And thank God there's Al-Anon, because I have this whole toolkit for when things get complicated or you just don't know what to do. I have this Al-Anon toolkit. And so there he is being a boy, doing boy things. And the first thing that came to mind for me was, get to a meeting. So it's a good thing there's no meetings at 2 p.m. So the other thing that came to mind for me was call your sponsor. Yeah, there's no way I'm calling an Al-Anon sponsor. I think that if you said the word sex to them, their heads might pop off. So I didn't want to call my Al-Anon sponsor. And or they might say something, they might give you one of those horrible little Al-Anon sayings like, well, dear, when you get busy, you get better. Or there's worse ones. Or like, well, dear, just be where your hands are. So I did not call my sponsor. I did the other thing you taught me to do. And when you're confused and you don't know what to do, you invite God. And so there's my husband being a boy, doing boy things. And I'm praying, dear God, this was never supposed to happen for us. But if you want this to happen, then dear God, you better show up. And then he did. And then we did. And now we still do. What I have learned after 22 years in Al-Anon, yeah, definitely. What I have learned after 22 years in Al-Anon is there is nothing so sexy as recovery. You know, some people go to the gym to become physically fit and attractive for, you know, whomever. When we go to meetings, we become spiritually fit and attractive for whomever. When you host a meeting like this, that's sexy. When you open a meeting, when my husband takes a meeting into the jails or works with a newcomer, I think that's hot. I tap that. And when he comes home smelling like really bad AA coffee, that's an aphrodisiac for me. So I want to thank Al-Anon and AA for bringing that kind of gift back into my life. Because really, we lose so much in the disease. And I would never have put money on any of these miracles coming back into my life. So I did get that little thing that says I probably should stop talking. And I forgot to look at the clock when I started. So I apologize. I want to share with you what you shared with me when I came to my first Al-Anon meetings. You said, do not leave 5 minutes before your miracles. And I would add, do not leave 5 minutes before your dump truck of miracles. If there is a dump truck for me and there's nothing special about me, I am just one of God's kids. There has to be a dump truck for you. And I would add that to that. Do not settle for your wildest dreams. If you're new here, do not settle for your wildest dreams. If I'd settled for my wildest dreams, we would have had a weekend camping trip. You know, instead we got 2 weeks in the Virgin Islands. If I'd settled for my wildest dreams, you know, my kids would still be going to the community college. Instead, they are graduates of these amazing programs. If I had settled for my wildest dreams, I would have had a husband who was a kind and cordial roommate. And, you know, instead I get Java Jeff, my boy toy. That's what I have. Thank you for inviting me to share.